finished 4 of the 6 chapters we are aiming to cover in this course. We have crossed the 50% point, which we did yesterday. So that is good. Now we are, in terms of the number of chapters, we are 2/3 way through. But this chapter is quite big, Detection of Regions of Interest. The last chapter on shape analysis is not that big. So we'll see how things go. What I will do is, in this chapter, there are some sections that are rather specific applications. I'll skip them when we get to those sections, such as detection of the breast boundary or detection of the pectoral muscle, I believe. Yeah, we have that here. Those two applications I'll skip. There is also the fuzzy segmentation part. I'll skip those so that we can go to chapter 6 and do as much of chapter 6 as possible. And then at the end of the lectures tomorrow, after I finish chapter 6, if there is time, we'll come back to the sections we skip here. We'll do quite a bit of chapter 5, but there are some specific applications and the fuzzy fusion that perhaps would not be of much interest to all of you. So let's see how things go today and tomorrow. I don't want to rush through, so we'll take the methods in detail as we go through, and those that we skip, we could revisit if there is time. So far, we have seen image processing techniques for the enhancement of images. We first formulated techniques to understand the nature of images, the quality of images, and their characteristics in the space and frequency domains. And then we looked at techniques to remove noise, to improve contrast, to detect edges, and so on, or to enhance edges to make them more apparent. Now, in this chapter, we will look at detection of regions of interest, which is also known as image segmentation. Image segmentation refers to the partitioning of a given image into parts that could correspond to certain objects or details of interest, and the others could be rejected, or the entire image could be broken into parts and all parts are labeled as something, and some of the parts could be background. Detection implies a little bit more than segmentation. Segmentation could involve marking of some initial points, such as seeds, where the detection is already performed. If a user has to mark a point and then say, find the region around this point, then a part of that detection process is already done by the user. When I say detection here, I also mean that the initial point is detected automatically by using a certain computer algorithm. That also is possible. So detection is a little bit further beyond segmentation, one step above, if you wish. So let's look at a few methods for the detection of certain regions or parts of images that could be of interest, and also their segmentation. In computer-aided diagnosis, CAD is for computer-aided diagnosis, one of the roles of image processing is to detect regions of interest, and ROI is used to indicate region of interest. Some people say ROI, but I'll say ROI. In the given application, so it depends upon the application as to what is your region of interest. Could be one, such as a tumor, or one type, such as calcifications, or could be several types of regions that relate to, let's say, breast cancer, or could be all regions, all parts of the body in a CT image. Detect all of them. And then perform characterization and classification of the regions. First, you break the image into parts and then label each part as the liver and the kidney and the bone and so on. Or if you find abnormal regions, identify them as calcifications or tumors or breast cancer or disease 1, 2, 3, 4. Examples of regions, several of them here. Cells in cervical smear test images, known as Papanicolaou or Pap smear test. This technique or this application has been studied quite a bit, and in Vancouver, in British Columbia, Canada, the British Columbia Cancer Board has a pap smear-based cervical cancer screening program where large numbers of these slides are taken, are collected from women in a certain screening population age group. And then there is a setup where these cells come in, these slides of the samples come in, and there is a robotic system that takes these slides, puts them under microscopes, and then captures images, several images of each slide, selecting parts of the slide where there is a part of interest or the cell information. And then there are image processing techniques that they have developed to extract several features, detect the cells, identify the cells, and compute several features and classify them. So that has been automated to a high extent. Calcifications in mammograms have been studied extensively. If you were to look in the literature, there are a few hundred papers, and there are some review articles that have described the various techniques that have been proposed. So we'll look into a couple of techniques for the detection of calcifications in this chapter. Detection of tumors and masses in mammograms. The pectoral muscle in mammogram, if there is time, we will look into that. Detection of tumors and masses is dealt with in another chapter in the book. So we won't have the time to go into that. The breast outline or the skin-air boundary in mammograms. Now that is another important application. And if there is time, we will look into that. It is in this chapter, but we may initially skip that. Detection of the fibroglandular disc in mammograms, which corresponds to the dense part of the breast with fibroglandular tissue. The airway tree in lungs, the arterial tree in lungs, the arterial tree of the left ventricle, to detect constricted parts of the arterial system within the cardiac system, to study, to evaluate if there is any plaque development or blockage which leads to myocardial ischemia or infarction. So these are some examples of what could be regions of interest, and the regions need not be very small, such as calcifications. There could be many, such as calcifications. It could be fairly large, such as the airway tree in the lungs or arterial tree. It could be a fairly large region in 3D. Segmentation is the process that divides an image into its constituent parts or objects or regions of interest. You may or may not break the entire image into parts. You may only detect certain parts, and you may be concerned only with certain types of parts. Now, segmentation is an essential and important step before the description, recognition, or classification can be performed. There are very few applications where you look at the entire image and say, this image represents such and such. Quite often, you have to detect certain very specific parts and label each part. And you have to look for the existence of certain features, of course, which may or may not exist. So detection implies looking for something that may or may not exist and ruling out the existence of something also. So the region of interest may not exist in the image, and then you have to declare that there is no such thing in the image. So not detecting something is also important. There are two major approaches to image segmentation, and they are based on discontinuity and similarity that appear to be opposite characteristics. So discontinuity is also a kind of a dissimilarity. So discontinuity represents abrupt changes in gray level in terms of large gradient, for example, or an edge. And such features are detected when you are basing your method on discontinuity. In the case of similarity, you are looking for parts that have similar characteristics and you put them together, such as region growing, and homogeneous parts are detected based on thresholding, region growing, splitting, merging, and so on. So the way you implement your method to detect regions and grow them or label them could be based on these two broad categories of the techniques. So there are some applications where the entire images need to be analyzed for global changes in patterns, such as bilateral asymmetry in mammograms. But even then, there could be certain tissue components that you want to compare, which is what we did by extracting the fibroglandular disc. Images with multi-component ROIs, you could start with, the analysis may commence with the detection of single units. So if there are multiple regions of interest, you may do one of them at a time, and then several such units may need to be analyzed separately and together before you can reach a decision. For example, there could be multiple calcifications. The examples I've shown indicate that there are several little bright spots of calcifications. So you want to detect all of them first, individually. You may want to analyze the shape of each one individually and the density. But then you may also want to analyze their total distribution in the image as a cluster. So your decision depends upon how many calcifications are detected. How are they distributed in the mammogram? Is one there, another here? Or are there 50 of them together within so many centimeters square of area? So that's what I mean here, that you have to detect each one individually, analyze each one, and then put all of them together, and then analyze that group also. So let's look at a few basic techniques. Thresholding and binarization is very easy, if you know the threshold. So if you know, for example, L1 is the limit, if that's the object that you want to detect, all values above L1, then values less than L1 will be set to 0, values more than L1 set to 255, then you are binarizing the image with a threshold. And the hope or expectation is that this result will show the objects that you have detected and that they correspond to the objects of interest. For example, here in the transmission electron microscopy image of collagen fibers, you want to detect each one of these little circular objects, cross-section of the collagen fibers, and count how many of them are there and what is the diameter of each one, and then get a distribution of the diameter, get the statistics of the diameter. So that is what we wanted to do in this project. So I applied a threshold, and these gray regions now are all converted to black and white binary or bi-level image. So the black regions are expected to correspond to the collagen fibers. So if I can measure the diameter of each one of these and make a histogram, then I can derive some statistics to say what is the range of the diameter of the collagen fibers in this image. And there are commercial image processing systems that do this. So we did a study on how the statistics of the diameter distribution of collagen fibers are affected by injury and the healing process in response to different types of treatment. Now, to derive this threshold value, L1, is another problem. We will look at a few techniques for that, depending upon the time. I showed this histogram earlier. The histogram of the image, the original image is shown here, where there are these spikes, which may be due to the noise present in the image or the quantization of gray levels. They are being rebinned in this manner during the process of quantization. But after applying a 3x3 mean filter, I got this histogram where there was smoothing of the image and regrouping of the pixels, which made the separation between the collagen fiber pixels, the darker pixels, and the background, the brighter pixels, more evident. So this is a clearly bimodal histogram with two modes corresponding to the collagen fiber regions and the background region. Now, when you have a bimodal histogram like this, the detection of the threshold or the identification of the threshold for binarization becomes easy. And typically, you would take the valley in between the two peaks and find the minimum there and use that as the threshold. That is not the best possible threshold. Let me write a plot here and show you. The ideal situation would be if you have your objects separated clearly. If this is the object of interest, and this is the background. If all object pixels have the same value and all the background pixels have the same value, then you get a histogram like this, and it's very evident. You can put your threshold anywhere in between and you get a good result. But in practice, you may have a situation where the object pixels have some variation around a certain mean, and the background pixels have another variation. And if there is separation between the two, you can put a threshold anywhere in between and achieve good separation. In practice, you don't get that either, and instead, you may get a histogram that goes like that, where these overlapping histograms create pixels or indicate the presence of pixels that have similar values for both the object and the background. Then the best you can do is to identify a threshold somewhere in between that will minimize the error of misclassification of the pixels. Some pixels will certainly be misclassified. Can you do that with the minimum error is the question. So you have to find a threshold that will minimize the misclassification of object as background and background as object. So when I say that the best threshold you can get is this valley, that is with misclassification. And that is evident here. Some of the pixels within the objects have been marked as white, which is background. If you look at some of these collagen fibers, there are holes in the corresponding black areas. And if you were to look around, you can also find that there are some black pixels here that correspond to the background. So there is already some error in the classification in this image, black for collagen and white for the background. You could do further processing to fill the holes. There are morphological image processing techniques. And in this course, we will not be looking at mathematical morphology at all. That's an important class of image processing techniques. And in MATLAB, you have that whole suite of techniques available with just very simple commands. But you need to know what each command does, each method does. And by applying certain techniques, it is possible to clean up an image of this nature and remove isolated pixels that may be in the background marked as black and fill in holes within black objects that have been misclassified as background, with the assumption that any hole inside a black object is a misclassified pixel, and any little speck in the background as a black pixel is a misclassified background pixel. So you make certain assumptions and then clean this and then process it further. You will also see that there are several collagen fiber parts stuck together. So if you want to measure the diameter of those three or four collagen fibers stuck together, then that becomes a problem. You need to separate such objects if possible or reject them from analysis. What is of interest here is not simply detecting the fibers, but also measuring their diameter individually. And when I say diameter, if you make the assumption that they are circular, then you would get one average diameter by fitting a circle to each one. Or if you consider each one to be an ellipse, then you get the major axis and the minor axis. And then a measure of ellipticity by taking the ratio of the two axes. So that is the kind of study we did with images of this type. So detection of objects of this nature could be used to derive further statistical measures to characterize the image. And in this particular case, to also study the nature of healing and how healing after injury affects the distribution of the diameter of the collagen fibers. And then, if you apply different types of treatment, how can you accelerate the modification, the healing process, and how can you guide an injured ligament towards the desired state of having a certain statistical distribution of the collagen fibers. So that is the application, potential application in clinical practice. In some cases, you may want to detect isolated points and lines, and that could be useful in noise removal and analysis of particles. either detect the presence of a particle, or if you detect an isolated particle in the background, for example, in the collagen fiber image after thresholding, then to call it noise and to remove that. There are some applications in high energy physics where particles are accelerated and then pictures are taken of them, and you want to detect the presence of these particles in these images. Then a simple mask like this, 8 and minus 1 for the 8 connected neighbors, can detect isolated pixels where there's only one pixel that is different from the background with a large difference. This is essentially taking a derivative, but the derivative is in all directions. You're asking how much is the center pixel different from the background on the average. And you can put different weights here if you wish. And whenever there is a large difference and you have to decide upon a threshold, you say that pixel is an isolated point or a particle. You can change the mask, you can make the mask bigger, and you can make the particle size bigger also and design an appropriate mask for your application. So although some of these masks are shown as 3x3 masks for just the sake of illustration or simple implementation, if you want to detect a larger particle than one pixel, you can design an appropriate larger mask. If you want to detect straight lines or segments of straight lines at 0, 45, 90 degrees and 135 degrees, you could use these masks. These are intuitively designed. They're also like template matching. You make a template and then apply it as a convolution. Convolution and correlation become the same if you do not consider or take into account the shifting involved, the reversal involved. In convolution, you take the impulse response or the mask, reverse it, and then apply it on the image point by point. Correlation is also essentially the same, but you don't reverse. And if the mask is symmetric, then reversal has no effect. So if you don't reverse, or if reversal has no effect, convolution and correlation are essentially the same operations. And correlation could be seen as template matching, where this is the template. A line has bright values along a certain direction, and then surrounding that, you have low values if you are looking at a bright line on a dark background. You could invert this if you want, but either way, you get a good difference, positive or negative. So you're asking, what is the difference between these three pixels as compared to the background on either side in that direction? And at 45 degrees, 90, and 135 degrees, you can do the same. Within the constraints of a 3x3 mask, then you only have these four possible directions. So a line may be said to exist in the direction for which the corresponding mask provides the largest response, positive or negative. Then you say, at that angle, whichever that is, of these four, you have a high response. You could extend it to 5x5 masks and 7x7 masks if you want more averaging. Note that this is a kind of averaging over three pixels. You're taking three differences and averaging. So the susceptibility to noise is reduced to some extent. Whereas if you take only one set of differences, or just one difference, then noise will give you large values and you could be misled by noisy regions or pixels. So a 3x3 mask has the advantage that you can combine three differences or the same operator three times. Of course, if you want to detect a line, you need the template of a line there over multiple pixels. Okay.